And again, this is the Mideast Madness Show for Monday, July 29, 2013. If it is 3:02 in the afternoon, PDT, wherever you are, then the show is live and you may call in at any time and speak at me. The phone numbers are 831. That's the area code for Santa Cruz County in California. 831-427-3772. Again, line one is 427-3772. And alternatively, line two is 469-3119. 469-3119. Got some really interesting stuffs for you here today on Mideast Madness. This sounds like some kind of an emergency, so I'd better get right to it. Maureen Smith sends... Oh, this has to do... I'm sorry. This really has to do with something else. But more important than that, anyway, here, this is the thing I wanted to really tell you about. There is here in Santa Cruz, California, a people's organization called the Resource Center for Nonviolence, and one of its subdivisions of volunteer activity is PIAC, the Palestine-Israel Action Committee. Justice Through Knowledge. And they say, "Dear supporter, this year our group, the Palestine-Israel Action Committee, will sponsor one University of California at Santa Cruz student, a UCSC student, through the Scott Kennedy Scholarship to travel on a delegation to the Israel-Palestine region with Interfaith Peace Builders. This year, Bo Outland, a third-year politics and feminist studies major, has been selected to join Interfaith Peace Builders on the summer delegation. Bo is leaving on August 10th to Washington, D.C. for her orientation before she travels to the Middle East. Each year, additionally, each year our group sponsors a delegation. This year we are sponsoring the Olive Harvest Delegation. The late Scott Kennedy co-founded Interfaith Peace Builders and led numerous delegations to the Middle East. But the Olive Harvest was one of his favorites. We are seeking your support by donating a gift to our silent auction. The auction will be held at the Interfaith Peace Builders Benefit at the RCNV, Resource Center for Nonviolence, which is located at 612 Ocean Street in downtown Santa Cruz. 612 Ocean Street. And that'll be this Sunday, this coming Sunday, August 4th at 7 p.m. 7 o'clock. Any size donation helps, and it is tax deductible. Donations made to the Resource Center for Nonviolence are tax deductible. The center is a program of Eschaton Foundation, which is a 501c3 tax exempt organization. Please direct the donation to the Scott Kennedy scholarship fund on the memo line. Thank you for your support, and we appreciate your generosity. Well, for most of you out there, I'm sure the important thing is, even if you don't have an item to donate to the silent auction, please come to the silent auction this Sunday, the 4th of August, 7 o'clock p.m. at the RCNV 612 Ocean Street. It should be... The thing is, I know I have other details about this. I believe it includes refreshments, wine, or wine tasting, or something like that. And I think that was the content of the first mistaken email that I was reading to you. Yeah, they're talking about bottles of Pinot Noir and stuff like that. So, should be a good gig, and for a very good cause. At least they're not just asking for a handout. PIAC is putting a lot of energy into making this an event, and not just another charity. Okay. Victory! Cumulus to drop Hannity and Rush Limbaugh. From my friends, Sarah Burris at Daily Kos, KOS, brought to us by Salsa Labs here. Sunday, July 28th, yesterday. Come on. Bloody damn stupid thing. Oh, God. Yeah, I come in 45 minutes early to try to clear up this stupid computer and make it work better, and just the process of doing exactly that takes forever. I have to abandon and cancel certain projects. At any rate, Cumulus to drop Hannity and Rush by Coyox, C-I-O-X-X, by way of the Daily Kos. In a major shakeup for the radio industry, Cumulus Media, the second biggest broadcaster in the country, is planning to drop both Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity from its stations at the end of the year, an industry source told Politico on Sunday. Cumulus has decided that it will not renew its contract with either host, the source said, a move that would remove the two most highly rated conservative talk personalities from more than 40 Cumulus channels in major markets. 40 might not sound like a lot, folks, but they did just say the second biggest broadcaster in the United States. The decision comes after negotiations between Cumulus and Premier Networks, which is the division of Clear Channel that distributes Limbaugh and Hannity shows. Decision comes after those negotiations broke down to disagreements over the cost of the distribution rights, the source said. Cumulus is known to drive a hard bargain on costs, and Clear Channel is known to seek top dollar for big names. Says here on the dispatch, I wonder what might be the reason. Well, back in May, a source close to Limbaugh told Politico that the host was considering ending his affiliation agreement with Cumulus because Chief Executive Officer Lou Dickey was blaming the company's advertising losses on Limbaugh's controversial remarks about Sandra Fluke, the Georgetown law student. On an earnings call 2 days later, Dickey reported a $2.4 million first quarter decline in revenue related to talk programming, which he attributed indirectly to Limbaugh's remarks about Fluke. It looks like the boycotts had a sizable effect. I Sarah, not Sandra Fluke, but the author, Sarah. Sarah, don't want to attribute this entirely to the Stop Rush campaign because there are other factors at work, like their listeners slowly dying out. But hey. Yeah, I really wanted to pass that along to you. Oh, just for fun, I'll read you some internet comments to this dispatch. The price of hot air. This isn't what it used to be. Free market. However, I predict that the blowhards will drop their price to continue on any and all stations that have the bad judgment to carry them. And this person quotes, "This Rover Crossed Over" by Willie Nelson, written by Dorothy Fields, whatever that means. Another comment. Rush started his radio career giving his programs away for free, and it looks like he's ending it that way. Karma. It's a bitch. And then I italicized a couple of sentences here under that comment. There already is class warfare in America. Unfortunately, the rich are winning. Another comment. I read it as about money. Cumulus likes cheap, and Clear Channel likes big bucks for big names. They could negotiate a deal yet. Time will tell. Comment under the comment. What we need is a Democrat in the White House. Warren, 2016. My guess that is that refers to Warren Buffett, which would be a tongue-in-cheek, humorous comment. Oh, anyway. Okay, let's... thanks for listening to that. It's the second or third time I've talked about Rush Limbaugh. I institutionally, categorically state that I despise the man. So I'm always happy to hear about bad news attributed to Rush Limbaugh. I don't listen to Hannity very much, but apparently he's a baddie, too. Something from the Jewish Voice for Peace. Alano Crivo Kaufman. Just today, writes, "Dear Wren, I waited 3 years between coming to grips with what it would mean to act on my opposition to the Israeli occupation and signing up as a JVP member. 3 years. To be honest, I wasted a lot of time those years worrying about losing access to Jewish communities. After 6 months as JVP's Northeast Field Organizing Fellow, I've realized stories about waiting comes up every time I talk to someone about Jewish Voice for Peace membership, whether they've been an activist for 30 years or went on a birthright trip last summer. But one thing is consistent. We all wish we joined sooner. That's why I hope you'll become an official JVP member today." Okay. I certainly do support JVP, but I do not at this particular time wish to get into a plug for JVP membership. You make a decision on your own. All right. Now, oh, here's another event. My good friend Dora. My good friend Dora, who lives just outside of Santa Cruz here. "Dear friends, hope that you are having a lovely weekend. Here's a reminder of Hallie Rubai's talk this Tuesday, July 30th. That's tomorrow, folks. Our JV Hour, that's Santa Cruz's own chapter of Jewish Voice for Peace's very first public event. A talk by Callie Rubai. I got a preview when we were testing the projector. It's going to be powerful. Warmly, Doris. Okay, here's the official announcement. Tuesday, July 30 at First Congregational Church, Callie Rubai on efforts to protect the village of Al-Aqaba from displacement. Official invitation. Jewish Voice for Peace, Santa Cruz Area Chapter presents Displacement Without Moving a Thing. Palestinian Families Under Occupation. Speaker, Callie Rubai, K-L-I-R-U-B-A-I-I. Doctoral candidate in anthropology at UCSC and the first English teacher in Al-Aqaba, West Bank, Palestine. 7 p.m., Tuesday, July 30th, at the First Congregational Church, 900 High Street, Santa Cruz, California, in the Fireside Lounge. 900 High Street in Santa Cruz. Callie Rubai was the first English teacher in Al-Aqaba, a Palestinian village in the West Bank. Her presentation will focus on how Palestinian families raise their children while struggling to keep their homes and village intact in the face of demolitions of homes, houses, live fire, and destruction of their farms, schools, and infrastructure. Callie will discuss Al-Aqaba's strategies and partnership with the nonprofit organization Rebuilding Alliance. As the village leads a novel approach to rebuilding homes and a school in a village where the population is under orders to move from their traditional lands. Al-Aqaba's strategies are a model for different areas of Palestine as well as other communities facing displacement. Callie Rubai and her mother, Deborah Ellis, a personal friend of mine and fellow activist with the Free Gaza Movement, Deborah Ellis and Callie have lived and worked with refugees and displaced communities in Syria, Jordan, Palestine, and other parts of the Middle East. A PhD candidate in anthropology at UCSC, Callie studies non-migratory displacement for people living under military occupation in Iraq and Palestine. She works with Rebuilding Alliance and the FOSNA, that's Friends of Sabil North America, to promote peaceful justice in Palestine. Callie is the co-founder of ISLA, ISLAH, an organization that gives Americans the opportunity to pay reparations to the Iraqi people through medical and advocacy support. For this event, tomorrow night, Tuesday, July 30th, at 7 p.m., a sliding scale of $5 to $15 is requested, although no one turned away for lack of funds. How can they do this? As welcomed as the admissions fee would be, the most important thing here ultimately is broad education to the masses about the situation in Palestine. We don't want to turn anyone away when they can at least come in and learn something about the situation. But they request $5 to $15 on that scale. More information, area code 831-427-0624. Or go to Dora B, that's D-O-R-A-H-B-E-E. At Comcast.net. Callie Rubai, tomorrow, Tuesday. No, not at RCNV. This is at the First Congregational Church in the Fireside Lounge. Reminder again, our phone numbers are area code 831-427-3772. Line 2 is 469-3119. You know, for all you people who are listening to us on an online basis, those who are happen to be picking up a refeed on Free Radio Santa Cruz on the World Wide Web right now, as we have for the time being no traditional broadcasted service on the radio waves on an interim basis. We're internet only. Or if you're listening to something from my archives at radioforall.net, I'm telling you, this is a very lonely operation. I mean, yes, it's true that I normally don't get any phone calls, although I have had a small number of them in the 14-odd months that I've been doing this program. But what makes it especially demoralizing right now is nobody can hear us right now on the radio set. And according to the Shoutcast computer program that we use here to monitor the number of people who are listening on the net, there's pretty close to nobody. Hence, this is a very lonely, demoralizing, discouraging activity that I'm engaging in. I'm here because I believe in what I'm doing. Ultimately, I expect that my words will get around to a lot more pairs of ears, or single ears for those who've lost hearing in one of them. And I just have to hang in there. Just wanted to get that off my chest. Lonely, lonely, lonely job. That does not make, none of that makes this work any less important, but for the fact that it's maybe nobody is listening. Now, what else do we have? I've spent at least three shows reading long stretches of the sheet from the IMEU Institute for Middle East Understanding fact sheet on the Israeli government and the two-state solution, rather than get into it afresh. I suggest you go to radioforall.net. That's the word radio, the numerical character for, ALL.net. Radioforall.net. Plug in Mideast Madness and look for the title Fact Sheet, Israeli Government, and the Two-State Solution, or anything that sounds like that. Fascinating stuff. I'm looking here to see if I can find anything that I haven't read to you. Well, speaking of Al-Aqaba, the Palestinian village in the West Bank, as I did a moment ago, here's another message from Jewish Voice for Peace. This one, not specifically from the new Santa Cruz chapter, but from Sidney Levy. This came to me back on July 10th, not that long ago, some 3 weeks ago. So Thanks again, Ren, for challenging the Prower plan with us. I was lucky to talk to Sheikh Abu Aziz this week, a leader in the Bedouin community, and wanted to make sure you were able to hear that you were able to hear what he had to say about the situation on the ground. Please take a minute to tell your friends to join you in this campaign, blah, blah, blah. Here's the meat of her message. Ren, see that photo? That's Sheikh Abu Aziz, whose village, Al-Araqib, has been razed by the Israeli government at least 50 times. This kind of thing is happening all over the West Bank, my friends. Al-Araqib has been razed by the Israelis at least 50 times. Sydney says, when I was in the Negev 3 years ago, I had the chance to spend the day in Al-Araqib and to hear the story of the devastating losses and undiminished resilience of the Bedouin communities in the Negev. The experience of the families in Al-Araqib may soon be echoed throughout the Bedouin community in the Negev. If we don't work together to stop the Prower-Begin plan, that's P-R-A-W-E-R-B-E-G-I-N, Prower-Begin plan, 40,000 women, children, and men who live in dozens of villages will be displaced in this same way. Sheikh Abu Aziz can tell you much more clearly than I what the Prower-Begin plan would mean for the Bedouin communities of the Negev. I was lucky to talk to him this week, and here's what he wants you to know. Sheikh Abu Aziz said, I have lived in my village, Al-Araqib, my whole life. The Israeli government says my village is, in quotes, unrecognized, which simply means they never bothered to put it on their official Israeli government maps, and so has bulldozed everything more than 50 times. What does unrecognized mean? Of course, they see the buildings, the olive trees, and the men and women and children living here. You do not send bulldozers, helicopters, and soldiers to destroy something that you cannot see. It does not mean that they do not recognize the suffering it causes us. You cannot see people screaming and crying each time you remove them from their homes and think it has no impact. What it means is that they do not recognize our legitimate rights as human beings to live in peace and dignity, where we have always lived. It means they do not recognize that we are fully human. Their insistence on destroying Al-Araqib means they do not recognize, it means they do recognize one thing, that much more than Al-Araqib is at stake. Why go to all the trouble over one village otherwise? What the Israeli government understands is that its power, I do not say legitimacy, I say power, comes from the refusal to recognize any opinion, any view of history other than its own. If they demolish Al-Araqib again and again, they will do the same to dozens of other Bedouin villages in the Negev as part of the Prower plan. They will not stop at the Negev. Why not Susia in the occupied West Bank? They refuse to let us live in our own land. End of the quotation from Sheikh Abu Aziz. Abu Aziz asks and answers a truly critical question here. And the best way to answer it is with principled strategic action. Send an email today and help us get to 18,000 to the ambassador of Israel in Washington before the plan takes another step forward. Now, I remind you that this dispatch came to me on July the 10th, about 3 weeks ago. I've not received anything lately about the implementation of the Prower-Begin plan. But you can always go to JVP's website, that's JVP as in Jewish Voice for Peace, and plug in or look for Prower Plan, P-R-A-W-E-R, or Prower-Begin Plan. Begin is spelled B-E-G-I-N, as in English, begin, as in the late former Prime Minister of Israel, Menachem Begin. The Prower-Begin Plan on the JVP website. Get the latest and perhaps add your name to the petition. It goes on to say here, it's still unclear when the Knesset will have a second reading of the Prower Plan. But what we have heard is that international pressure is having an impact, which means that without ever going to Al-Araqib or meeting Sheikh Abu Aziz, we can still work together. And it's an opportunity we should all seize. 15,000 people have already emailed Israeli ambassador to the U.S., Michael Oren, urging him to do everything he can to make sure the Israeli government understands that it would be a grave mistake to pass this displacement blueprint into law. Please add your voice today. Sincerely, Sidney Levy, Director of Advocacy, Jewish Voice for Peace. Postscript here. It's not clear there's any connection, but Ambassador Oren, Michael Oren, announced his resignation last week, effective sometime this fall. We're definitely monitoring what this transition will bring, but until his last day in office, it is still his job to hear our concerns and relay them back to the Israeli government. That's basically the end of the text here. I will tell you that Ambassador Michael Oren probably still the current Israeli ambassador to the United States was a son of a bitch. I've heard him speak. I've read his material. He eagerly parrots the worst things to come out of the Palestinian Authority, the feeble governing body for the Palestinian people, as it were, or what comes out of Hamas. For example, he lashes out against Hamas for having it in their charter, in Hamas's founding charter. Hamas is the governing body of the Gaza Strip, where more Palestinians live, 1.7 of them. Well, I must interrupt myself. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. This is an important message for Mary, the AUGHM. If this is Mary, the AUGHM, please press 1. To place this call on hold to allow time for this person to come to the phone, please press 2. If this person is not available, please press 3. If we have reached the wrong number for this person, please press 4 to speak with one of our representatives who will assist in correcting this matter.
Okay, folks, a non-live call just came in on our line, too. We've certainly had wrong numbers in the past, Sometimes we get business-related calls to the Free Radio Santa Cruz service. This one was really weird. I'm wary of getting harassment calls from people who don't care for what I have to say or don't care for Santa Cruz's very own free radio service as a whole. I received a robocall here moments ago from someone asking for someone who I didn't know. No other identifying information. Offhand, I would say the greatest likelihood is that it was a wrong number. Or since it was a robocall, it might have been a technical wrong number. But there is also the possibility that people are out to get me. Want to make things difficult for Free Radio Santa Cruz or for the Mideast Madness program. As the sentiment here is clearly pro-Palestinian. It also happens to be pro-people, pro-peace, pro-justice, pro-truth. I shall return to what I was saying about Israeli ambassador to the United States, Michael Oren. He took advantage of the opportunity to speak live to American audiences a while back about how the Hamas government charter, Muslim Brotherhood in Palestine, how the Hamas charter calls for, as he put it, the murder of every last Jewish individual on earth. I've read the English translation of Hamas's charter. It certainly did not use those words. Although it did have some mean things to say about how every good Muslim and or every good Palestinian should be in perpetual conflict with their Jewish oppressors. I do not support that. For me, it's taken out of context if it is reliant upon a greater founding charter, or if it's based on the Islamic holy book, the Quran. For me, it's taken out of context because I have not read the Quran. So it could be that all of us ignorant people who have not read the Quran, or that portion of the Quran talking about that, it would be the case that we're at the mercy of this man, this Michael Oren's devastating remarks about how all Hamas wants to do is kill all the Israelis, while he is warning the world about that heavy chunk of negativity. He continues to represent to the U.S. the Israeli government's policies of essentially doing away with Palestinianism and doing away with the Palestinian people themselves. With demolishing their homes, removing them from their ancestral lands, which I personally believe is far more important than a historical or religious connection that many Jews, that the majority of Israeli Jews have to the land based on a history going back well over 2,000 years. This makes the Palestinian Arabs the truly indigenous people of that piece of land on the eastern Mediterranean. And so Israel continues to displace, to demolish, and one way or another to end the lives of so many more Palestinians than those who believe in armed resistance are able to commit against the Israelis. living behind the comfort of the security fence, as they call it, which also separates Israel's illegal settlements in Palestine from the Palestinians living in Palestine, not just the recognized nation of Israel, from Israel's occupied territories, but the wall, this physical wall, fence, whatever you want to call it, is separating the Palestinian people not only from settlers as they continue to expand and expand and expand their presence illegally in militarily occupied land. This wall also separates Palestinians from their own land. The wall, in many cases, cuts off, separates, physically separates the homes of some Palestinian families from their fields or from other parts of their property, which is necessary for them to make their living, to make a life for themselves. It also makes what I refer to as a Swiss cheese. Just look at the maps. Any map that will show you the reality of the West Bank today vis-a-vis this security slash fence wall, which many refer to as the apartheid wall, and it, in effect, it is an apartheid wall separating people. The wall makes the Swiss cheese out of the West Bank and to some degree out of East Jerusalem, and there goes the contiguousness of any future Palestinian state and the contiguity of any Palestinians under occupation to link with certain others of their own kind, of their own nation. Indeed, the security fence or wall, apartheid wall, not only has very successfully prevented suicide attacks into Israel, which wouldn't be happening if Israel would only play ball according to the wishes of the international community and with the PA, Mahmoud Abbas's government in Palestine. There wouldn't be any attacks from anyone if Palestine were to be a sovereign, independent state. So not only does this wall allow the Israelis to live without being bothered or worried by such attacks, it decimates the lives and society of Palestine. And the Israelis know this. Turns out that the wall is very instrumental in further dividing and conquering the West Bank. It's so obvious, and so much of the world still refuses to see this or is in total ignorance of it. When talking about apartheid, it's not just a hostile name for this wall of hostility. It is also a very accurate description of the attitudes of the Israeli people according to recent surveys that have been taken. Before I leave this page, let me remind you of the basics. We heard the words of Sheikh Abu Aziz, Mr. Sheikh Abu Aziz, from the village of Al-Araqib, being raised by the Israeli government more than 50 times. And an effort to save these people from being kicked out of their ancestral homes is ongoing. Now, You heard me say something about surveys. Let's see if I can find one of these articles here that speaks about such surveys. I have read them on Mideast Madness in the past. Unfortunately, it's several months ago. So I probably should plug in. Israeli surveys and search my email. Okay, search results. Here's one that I never opened, although I may have gotten this material from a separate dispatch. My friend Donna, who happens to be one of Free Radio's monthly contributors with her own Saturday show. She does the Free Our Minds show, according to this here schedule, the second Saturday of every month, 6 to 8 p.m. I'm sorry, it's a three-hour show, 6 to 9 p.m. Second Saturday of the month, Free Our Minds. She is also a fellow participant and founding member of the Free Gaza Movement, which has made a number of successful voyages by sea into the port of Gaza City. She and I were together on the very first one 5 years ago. Donna says, "Greetings all. From my experience of living in occupied Palestine," this is Donna talking, "occupied Palestine, also known as Israel, the great majority of Jewish Israelis care nothing about peace for Palestinians. They only care about their own peace. Most of the Jewish Israelis that I met had never spoken to a Palestinian, knew nothing of what their lives are like under the Israeli occupation. The schools, the Israeli government, and the media promote fear of Palestinians, but they don't even call them Palestinians. They are called Arabs. The bigotry, prejudice, and discrimination against Palestinians is rampant, institutionalized, and pervasive. I would be very surprised if this poll actually included Palestinians." A prefatory comment from Donna herself, and yes, Donna and her twin sister Darlene are Jews. At least one, if not both of them, lived in Israel, in the Jewish state of Israel, for some 15 years, starting off as ardent Zionists and eventually becoming disenchanted with the whole mess, seeing Zionism for the inherently racist activity that it is, and in their own minds rejecting Israel as a colonialist state and Zionism as an offensive, wrong for its time, in history activity. Donna passes along to us a message from Omar Barghouti, who is a Palestinian activist. Omar Barghouti says, "It is important to note that this poll was conducted among, quote, Israelis, with no distinction between Jewish Israelis and Palestinians holding Israeli citizenship, who make up at least 20% of the public. This means that this figure would rise sharply if the poll was taken among Jewish Israelis alone." This, by the way, is from last December 26th. The subject matter is two-thirds of Israelis reject even a demilitarized Palestinian state. Let us continue with Mr. Bargoody's article. Still, this figure is significant enough to put to rest all claims that, quote, most Israelis support the so-called two-state solution. In fact, the absolute majority of Jewish Israelis have consistently, and he underlines the word consistently, supported wars, massacres, apartheid, and colonial expansion against the indigenous Palestinian people. Well over 90%, for instance, supported the most recent Israeli war/massacre in Gaza, while 94% supported the 2008-09 Israeli massacre in Gaza. Let me just chime in here. Let Ren chime in. It's easy to dismiss the Israeli incursions of 2008 and 2009 and 2012, last November 2012, to dismiss them as massacres because Gaza does not have a standing army. They have mostly militant splinter groups splintering off of the Hamas Authority, who fire rockets and mortars, in some cases, into Israel, which in the last at least couple of years have killed no more than 20, a total of 20 Israeli individuals in their country. I recognize and admit that these rocket firings, these missiles coming out of the Gaza Strip, constitute a war crime. And that does not make the retaliatory Israeli incursions any less of a war crime. They were truly massacres, as the Gazans do not have a standing army. You can't call it a war when Israel has massive air power, artillery, and armored tanks, in addition to its invading forces, and its use of terrible, ghastly weapons such as white phosphorus, which, as I see it, is akin to the napalm that America used in Vietnam. Burns the skin off of the bodies of little children. Like, they really need to do that, right? To discourage the Gazans and keep them in line. My tongue securely in my cheek. Okay, back to the Omar Bargoody's dispatch about the survey. Even at the height of the so-called peace process, polls that showed majorities in Israel supporting, quote, peace, hardly ever defined what this term meant to Israelis. Scratching underneath the surface of these deceptive polls, it was never hard to find out that to almost all Jewish Israelis, peace has always meant submission by the Palestinian people to a situation where only a tiny subset of rights are recognized by Israel, while the basic rights of the absolute majority of the Palestinian people would not be respected. Always a peace without justice? No, that's not a question mark. That's an exclamation point. Always a peace without justice, says Bargoody. While the minority of Jewish Israelis supporting peace with justice remains very small, it includes some of the most principled and inspiring activists whose impact is growing steadily. Speaking of Jewish Israelis, Jewish Israeli peace activists whose impact is growing steadily. Signed, Omar. And here is the poll brought to you by English.aram, aharam.org. 66% of Israelis oppose demilitarized Palestinian state, a poll from the agencies, Friday, 21 December 2012. Subheading, with the United Nations strongly condemning recent government approval for settlement plans, a poll released Friday shows that two-thirds of Israelis reject the establishment of a demilitarized Palestinian state. Even of a demilitarized Palestinian state. Here it is, folks. Two-thirds of Israelis are opposed to the establishment of a demilitarized Palestinian state in the West Bank, a poll showed on Friday. According to the results of a Magar Mohot survey published in Ma'ariv newspaper, when asked if they would support the establishment of such a state, 66%, right on the two-thirds mark, said they would not, while 11% said they would. The poll, which surveyed 511 people between 19 and 20 December, has a margin of error of 4.5%. Just over half, or 51%, said they would support building new settler homes, Zionist Jewish settler homes, for Israeli Jews in a highly sensitive area of the West Bank called E1, which lies between annexed East Germany and the nearby Ma'ale Adumim settlement. That's the E1 zone. Only 9% said they were against such a move. The remaining 40%, that's two-fifths, were undecided. 3 weeks ago, Israel said it was planning to build thousands of settler homes there, sparking a major diplomatic backlash, with experts saying it could cause severe harm to the continuity of a future Palestinian state. The plan involves building 2,610 homes in East Jerusalem and tenders for 1,048 units in the West Bank, just before the United Nations meeting in response to the UN General Assembly vote on 29 November to recognize Palestine as a non-member state. So the plan involves, as it says here, building the homes and units in East Jerusalem and West Bank before the UN meeting in response to the UN General Assembly on 20 November. That would have been last November when the UN recognized Palestine as a non-member state. This is the infamous Benjamin Netanyahu announcement, which was taken widely as a quote-unquote punishment of the Palestinian Authority for submitting to the UN this request and a nose-thumbing at the UN for accepting it. Article continues. The United Nations and the UN Security Council powers on Wednesday condemned Israel's rise in settler construction in occupied Palestine as a threat to flagging peace efforts. UN leader Ban Ki-moon and the UN envoys from several European Union countries, Russia and China, warned Israel against building new settler homes, describing the Israel-Palestinian peace process as in, quote, deep freeze, and pointing out that it will be exacerbated by the settlement approvals. Israel will be held accountable, quote-unquote, for its settlement building, a senior Palestinian official said Thursday after Israel pushed forward plans for more than 5,000 new settler homes. So, I thought this was going to be talking more about the poll as such and the contents of this poll taken over 2 days of 511 Israelis. But now it's getting into a lot of explanation of what the settlements are about. I think I will continue. Okay, just wet my whistle there. Continuing, quote, "The settlers and the government of Israel should know they will be held accountable." Nabil Abu Rudina, spokesman for President Mahmoud Abbas, told AFP shortly after Israel reportedly okayed initial plans for a new settlement city in the southern West Bank. He said all construction on Palestinian land seized by Israel during the 1967 Six-Day War was illegal, and that nothing would remain of the settlements after a peace deal. Quote, "Not a single stone of those hysterical settlement projects in the West Bank or East Jerusalem will remain, so the Israeli government should back off immediately," he said. What he means, of course, in those last two sentences that I read to you, is that once there is an independent, sovereign, and secure state of Palestine in the West Bank, and preferably East Jerusalem, the Palestinians will kick the Jews out of their land for once. For once. Instead of the other way around. Depopulate the settlements and tear them down. So his point is, what's Israel's point? I will address that further when I'm finished with this dispatch. Continuing. His remarks came after the European Union's foreign policy chief, Catherine Ashton, said she was, quote, "strongly opposed to Israel's ramped-up settlement building, particularly around East Jerusalem, which she described as extremely troubling." UN ambassadors from Britain, France, Germany, and Portugal highlighted European fears over the peace stalemate and stressed that their governments strongly oppose the Israeli construction plans. Non-aligned members of the Security Council, Azerbaijan, Colombia, India, Guatemala, Morocco, an Arab country, by the way, Pakistan, South Africa, and Togo in Africa, read their own statement of condemnation. China also joined the protest before all were rebuffed by Israel. The United States traditionally protects Israel at the Security Council. Using its power as a permanent member, it has vetoed many resolutions criticizing Israel, including over settlements. By my observation, the United States has almost exclusively vetoed any anti-Israel action in its from its bully pulpit as a permanent member of the UN Security Council. Continuing, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Susan Rice did not join the public attack on Israel, but slammed the quote-unquote provocative act of the United States' major ally, Israel, during closed UN Security Council consultations. However, Rice reaffirmed growing U.S. impatience with its ally during closed talks at the council, diplomatics said, on condition of anonymity. However, in a statement released by his office, Israeli Prime Minister and head of the right-wing Likud, Betanu List, Benjamin Netanyahu claimed that Jerusalem has been the capital of the Jewish people for, quote, 3,000 years, end quote, adding that his government will continue its plans for settlement construction in Jerusalem. Building new settlements serves the interests of the people living in Jerusalem, regardless if they are Jews or Arabs, Israeli radio reported Netanyahu said during his meeting with ambassadors to Israel from Asia in Jerusalem. With less than 5 weeks until general elections on 22 January, the survey found steady support for Netanyahu and his electoral list, which was seen taking 37 of the 120 seats in parliament, or the Knesset, down one from last week's survey. One seat, folks, out of 120. The center-left Labour Party held steady at 20 seats, while the nationalist pro-settler Jewish Home gained one seat, with a total of 12. The ultra-Orthodox Shas, S-H-A-S, Shas, lost one seat to stand at 11, while the opposition Kadima, currently the largest party in parliament with 28 seats, was seen taking just one seat, reflecting multiple surveys which have said the party would be all but wiped out. Hard to believe from a party which is the largest in parliament. The center-right Hatnua party of former foreign minister Tzipi Livni was flat at 9 seats, while the centrist Yesh Atid was seen shedding one seat to hold at 8. Finally, overall, the poll saw the bloc of right-wing and ultra-Orthodox parties taking 69 seats compared with 41 for the center-left. All right, my friends, it is 1609 hours, 1600 hours, 9 minutes, 4:09 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time here on the west coast of North America. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. I am Ren with the Mideast Madness Show, Monday version. I come to you weekly every Monday at 3 p.m. for 2 hours. Mideast Madness also broadcasts another live show every Saturday now, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. That's two 2-hour shows per week, just shy of 4 hours per week, Mondays at 3 p.m., Saturdays starting at 11 a.m. Just taking a look here once again to see how many people are listening to us on the internet. I shall not reveal the number. Yeah, I know we're streaming and we are recording. Phone numbers here, area code 831-427-3772, or you may call me at 469-3119. Okay. Folks, I hope you can all see what's going on here. It's be blatant even to an illiterate 2-year-old who come into this world having some notion of right and wrong. Israelis forever touting their precious democracy, and Netanyahu touting about how what happens in Jerusalem serves the needs and wishes of everyone living in Jerusalem, regardless if they're Jews or Arabs, Netanyahu says. That's just what comes out of his mouth. And if you have been listening to the many shows I've had featuring the reality of Jerusalem today, and how for a united city, ostensibly united for all Jews and Palestinians, supposedly, is in fact administratively divided into at least 5 separate divisions, depending on who lives where and how many of them live where they live. If you want to know more details, I submit to you once again, go to Radio for All. Look for any Mideast Madness show that has the word Jerusalem in the title of it. I will not get into it again at this time. But I think what I will do is put up some refeeds from my own folder of past shows so you can hear them sometime this coming week on this radio service in Santa Cruz. Internet radio service only, unfortunately, for the time being. We're still looking for a place to put up our antenna so we can broadcast over the airwaves like we did, like we have, with virtually no interruption for the past 18 years. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz, folks, liberating the airwaves since 1995. So much more to do. So getting back to what any illiterate 2-year-old, as it were, can tell you, with the assurance that Israel has a military supremacy and the supremacy of the power of their police and occupation forces over the oh-so-uppity Palestinians under occupation, the Israelis feel comfortable, a good 2/3 of them, 66% of them, opposing the creation of even a demilitarized Palestine, of no military threat to them. They don't want to see, they don't care to see the Palestinians living under any formal title or entity in their ancestral homelands in the West Bank, or the Gaza Strip for that matter, considering how the Gazans are continuing to be treated by the IDF. To me, it is corollary that these same 66% of Israelis who don't want a demilitarized Palestinian state or any Palestinian state also would be perfectly fine with the expansion of Israel into all of historic Palestine, which they claim by right of ancestry and religion under the philosophy of political Zionism to be theirs, regardless of the reality of today's population facts, distribution of ethnicities, etc. Thanks to things like this apartheid wall, the Israelis feel secure enough now to take such an immoral stand as they have for so long operated with impunity, without viable confrontation by those who oppose them, and take advantage of that to illegally, unethically, wrongly, and immorally take land from the natives, just as the European whites took land from the Native Americans. And the Americans call that manifest destiny. In other words, God said it's okay for them to populate the New World all the way to the Pacific Ocean, regardless of who was there first. So you can see that instead of a genuine peace process, which seeks the best, the greatest good for all concerned, every ethnicity, every speaker of whichever language, every religion, and every individual, instead of peace and justice for all those, they're thumbing their nose at the world. And even this latest news, with its constant quotes of U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry giving his very cautious approvals of recent developments with Israelis and Palestinian Authority leaders converging on Washington, D.C. for yet another so-called peace powwow. By now, y'all got to see that this is all for show and that Israel has no genuine interest in that kind of peace. Peace of equity between two peoples. Even the recognition that there is another people, as it were, or another nationalities. They won't do it. They make a big deal through the news media that they're now shaking hands again with the opposition. And there needn't be oppositions as such. The Israelis just don't care to really, honestly work with the Arabs, with the Palestinian Authority, or Hamas. Only to attack them, harass them, and reduce their power and their grip on land. On their homes, their farms, their livelihoods, their cities and towns in the West Bank, the whole of which is still crawling with so-called Israeli Defense Forces soldiers throughout the West Bank, which the Israelis refer to only as Judea and Samaria, again, totally obsolete biblical references, just something to make them feel comfortable about their presence there. Israeli soldiers all over illegally held land. All right. I know I do tend to ramble, but I finished reading the piece to you. As you may have guessed, I have not prepared a whole lot of new stuff to read to you, to relate to you on this radio service, on the Mideast Madness Show. That I am in a rather extended commentary about what I just read to you. The Israelis are not primarily interested in a peace of true equity and true justice, which includes Palestinian Arabs. They're interested in erasing Arab society and replacing them with a and as it were, new Israeli society. Colonialism at its worst, at its most contemptuous, with so much of the fundamentalist Christian community behind them to boot. Why? Because the Israeli Jew has this collar on the emotional necks of these Bible-thumping Christian fundamentalists who see it as their duty to support Israel no matter what, no matter what is actually happening in reality on earth, but with their eyes on heaven. The Christians just want to see all the Jews repenting and turning to Jesus anyway. That's their agenda. So all this stuff about supporting Israel lays in their interpretation of biblical prophecy. That's what that's about. Now, talking about my readings on the air here, or over the internet right now. First let me see if there's anything else along the lines of surveys that I could read to you. Come on. There we go. Okay. No, that's just another version of the same reading. Look for another one. I'm still here. I'm looking for some more interesting stuff from questionnaires to the Israeli public. Ah, here's a familiar title. Haaretz, as I'm sure you know, many of you know, is the leading, most influential newspaper periodical in Israel. It is the oldest one, and it contains a great deal of remarkably enlightening and truth-leaning editorials and news reports. From Haaretz.com, October 25 of last year, 2012. This is entitled, Meet the Israelis. Continue to judge for yourself, folks. Meet the Israelis. Published by Haaretz. Nice to make your acquaintance. We're racist and pro-apartheid. The poll, whose results were published in Haaretz on Tuesday, conducted by Dialogue and commissioned by the Yisraela Goldblum Fund, proved what we always knew, if not so bluntly. It's important to recognize the truth that has been thrown in our faces, and our faces and those of the world, where the survey is making waves. But it's even more important to draw the necessary conclusions from it. Given the current reality, dating back to last December, making peace would be an almost anti-democratic act. Most Israelis don't want it, it says here. A just egalitarian society would also violate the wishes of most Israelis. That, too, is something they don't want. They're satisfied with the racism, comfortable with the occupation, pleased with the apartheid. Things are very good for them in this country. That's what they told the pollsters. Until a courageous leadership arises here, the kind that appears only rarely in history, and tries to change this nationalist racist mood, there's no point in hoping for change to come from below. It won't come. Indeed, it can't come, because it is contrary to the desires of most Israelis. This fact must be recognized. Again, folks, I am reading from an article from Haaretz Online. It was sent to me October 25th, 2012. And that's the one date that I have for it, entitled Meet the Israelis. Let us continue. The world must also recognize this. The world must also recognize this. Those who long to reach an agreement and draw up periodic peace plans must finally recognize that Israelis are plainly telling them, quote, no thanks, we're not interested, end quote. The Arab world must similarly recognize that this survey and others like it is Israel's real Bar-Ilan speech. Israel's real Bar-Ilan speech. He's referring here to an appearance that Prime Minister Netanyahu made at Bar-Ilan University in Israel and made some off-putting remarks about Palestinians and their needs and desires. He goes on, this article goes on, it's hard to blame Israelis. Years of brainwashing, the demonization and dehumanization of Arabs in general and Palestinians in particular, coupled with years of vicious terror, have left their scars. What, for heaven's sake, do you want from Israelis who are exposed daily to the media telling them, for instance, that the recent visit to the Gaza Strip by the Emir of Qatar, Sheikh Hamid bin Khalifa Al Thani, who came to donate hundreds of millions of dollars to build roads, is, quote, Qatar for terror, as the lead headline in yesterday's Hebrew edition of Israel Hayom put it. Why would they want to make peace with those who for decades have been systematically portrayed to them, speaking only to annihilate them? Why would the average Israeli agree to have an Arab student in his child's class or an Arab family in his apartment building if he has never met an Arab and knows of them only as terrorists, criminals, or primitive people? The only images of Arabs to which he has been exposed. Why would he think that discrimination against Arabs by government ministries is a bad thing if the only reality he knows is one where Arabs are sewer workers or street sweepers and he doesn't know the Arabs are capable of more than that? After all, even secular Israelis who displayed the most tolerant views in the survey don't actually know who they're talking about. When have they ever met an Arab? When have their children met one? And if they have, what kind of Arab have they met besides the delivery boy from the grocery store, the owner of the neighborhood greengrocer, the car wash employee, Ahmed the plasterer or scaffolding builder? And that's without even talking about Palestinians. The last time, and also the first, they met a Palestinian, if ever, was during their army service through the sight of a rifle as a suspicious and dangerous object. Nevertheless, this brainwashing doesn't absolve Israelis of responsibility. It's true that the education system, and even more so the media, incite and inflame, sow hatred and fear. But they do so to conform to their audience's tastes. Where have we heard this before, folks? It's a depressingly vicious circle in which it isn't clear which came first. By the way, it's 4:31 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. This is the Mideast Madness Show on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Continuing, after all, if the Israeli media thought their brainwashing was repulsive to its customers, they would long since have abandoned it. But it knows its customers' hearts. The political establishment, too, understands the nature of the beast. That's why we are now caught in a mad, dizzying race to the right. Yesh Atid political party chairman Yair Lapid is vying with Labour Party leader Shelley Yasimovich over who is more right-wing. Thus, the situation can't be excused on the grounds of incitement. Israelis are always happy to be incited against the Arab from Baqa or the Palestinian from the Kasbah. Ratings-conscious media and politicians facing primary battles are only hitching a ride on them. One-third of Israelis want to deny Arab citizens the right to vote. That's Arab citizens of Israel. Israeli Palestinians, another name for them. About half of Israelis favor a policy of, quote, end quote, transferring Arabs out of the country. And a majority says there is apartheid here. A majority of Israelis admits you can call what's going on there a form of apartheid. We need to finally give up on the hope that things will get better. A thoroughly depressing ending sentence to this article from Haaretz in Israel. And when they say we need to finally give up on the hope that things will get better, it could be just a note of cynicism, a satire on reality, or if they were to spell it out a little more concisely what they mean by giving up hope that things will get better, then they might say giving up hope that things will get better through the status quo of customer-conscious media, which doesn't mind the incitement they generate with their dispatches. Yeah, I don't think I ever read that one to you at all. That's one of my classics. I'm going to have to create a file for classic dispatches and pieces for the Mideast Madness show. This, what I just read to you only confirms my personal, unprinted, unpublished commentary on the other commentaries. It confirms it. Here. From last April, towards an endgame in Palestine-Israel, while imagining the future, this is written by Jeff Halper, an Israeli Jew born in Minnesota, yet another former shipmate of mine on the founding voyages in August of 2008 from Cyprus to the Gaza Strip. He also happens to have been, just a couple of years before that, a nominee for the Nobel Peace Prize. Unfortunately, he never received the Nobel Peace Prize, but anyone who speaks on behalf of the truth and genuine justice and on behalf of the Palestinians is no surprise at all that they're not going to get that kind of recognition. Hearing and understanding Jeff Halper, read his Endgame article below, then hear and talk with Jeff. Well, he was in town on last April 14th at the RCNB, gave his talk, we greeted each other, And here's his Endgame article. From Jeff's desk. Jeff, by the way, is co-founder and director of the ICAD movement. ICAD, that's the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions. Referring, of course, to the demolition of Palestinian homes, both outside and inside the state of Israel, either side of the Green Line. He lives in Jerusalem. Towards an end game in Palestine, Israel, while imagining the future, by Dr. Jeff Halper, Ph.D. Last September, ICAD, the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions, which had long argued that the two-state solution was dead, decided to bite the bullet and endorse a one-state solution. We first circulated a draft among our Palestinian partners for comment. The reaction was deafening in its silence. Either fewer of our counterparts than we thought were willing to abandon the two-state solution, the goal of their national liberation struggle these past 25 years for one state, or they objected to our framing it within a framework of binationalism. In the end, we pulled back, putting out instead a position paper in which we tried to insert a critical Israeli voice into the one-state formulation. It is clear that, despite the fact that most Palestinians realize that the two-state solution is gone, they have as yet to shift to a one-state solution in meaningful numbers. While I understand this dilemma of moving from a solution that, in principle at least, is acceptable to the international community, to one that has little chance of being accepted, a nagging feeling of frustration and fear has dogged me ever since. How could we be in the midst of a political struggle without a political end game? What do we say to political decision makers, the general public, or our own activists when they ask, "What is it exactly that you want?" Quote, "Ending the occupation," end quote, provides a partial answer at best. Indeed, we shifted to the one-state solution because, in our view, the occupation will end and a Palestinian state will not emerge in that small and fragmented territory. At the same time, we fully appreciate that the Palestinians' reluctance to give up a national liberation struggle in favor of a struggle for civil rights, which is what a one-state solution, inclusive of Israeli Jews, would entail, even if it was achievable. We are, in short, and he quotes here, between solutions. We are in a state of transition from the two-state solution to something yet unidentified. That is to be expected. Political struggles must adapt to changing circumstances and adjust their strategies and even their end goals accordingly. But if we are to maintain our political momentum, we must transit fairly quickly to an end game that genuinely resolves the conflict. BDS, boycotts, divestment, sanctions, is a valuable tactic for keeping the issue alive, but it cannot replace an end game and an effective strategy for achieving it. This paper attempts to hasten the process of transitioning to a new end game by making the case for a democratic yet binational state. Not that this necessarily is the solution, and it certainly needs to be fleshed out, but discussing it helps clarify the issues at stake. It brings out fundamental differences to view It brings out fundamental differences of view upon which a constructive and much-needed exchange is based. It is incumbent upon us, the grassroots civil society, to formulate solutions that, if not ideal, contain elements that progressives can support and advocate. For governments will not do this. They are not our partners. Rather than resolving conflicts, the international community, including the United Nations, merely manages them. And if a fellow government like Israel can subdue the Palestinians to a point where they cease to disrupt the international system, they can live perfectly well with occupation, apartheid, and warehousing. Warehousing of a people, Dr. Halper refers to. It is up to us to formulate a genuine and just solution, or at least a direction, and then generate pressure from below on governments to act. That's just the way it works. So if this paper can help crystallize the issues and catalyze discussion, it will have discussed its purpose. Now, I see, my friends, that this is a very, very long position paper. I can't make much more than a dent in it if I were to try to read it by the end of the show, and the show will officially end in 12 minutes. I'll probably read this to you next Monday. Now, next Monday's Mideast Madness show, finish it for you. Hopefully we can finish it. It's much, much longer even than that fact sheet on the Israeli government and the two-state solution. But he does. Let's do a quick overview. Two states, majority of Palestinians living in Palestine, and in principle, most Israeli Jews. A prescription for getting to that end. Here's another jab at it here. Two states, colon, apartheid, which seems to be the position of the labor center left Israeli governments. I believe he's referring to recent Israeli history where there have been center left Israeli governments. Another take on one ethnocratic state. Hamas, right-wing Zionists, and some anti-Zionist Israeli Jews, and, perhaps, a growing number of Palestinian intellectuals. Dr. Halper is reflecting on a number of viewpoints. The range of possible solutions, as he refers to it. And the one state, Palestinians on the left. One binational state dominated by Israeli Jews with Palestinian autonomy that comes from the settler movement. Hard to believe they would say anything about Palestinian autonomy. Just a name, at any rate. One democratic binational state, anti- or post-Zionist Israeli Jews, critical Palestinian intellectuals, and a good number of Palestinians in Israel and the diaspora. One democratic binational state. So he goes over the history of all of those positions. And then there's a section, bridging a growing gap. Can a common vision be achieved? Several paragraphs here. Then there is the central elements of a just and sustainable Israeli-Palestinian peace. Professor Halper seems to be talking about a lot of... He seems to be fleshing out the real substance that a high-level government-to-government peace process just cannot address. Several elements under the essential elements of a just and sustainable Israeli-Palestinian peace. One, a just peace in the process leading up to it must conform to human rights, international law, and UN resolutions. Point two, a just peace must accept the binational reality of PI, Palestine-Israel, and be inclusive of both peoples. Three, A just peace must find a balance between collective rights, or self-determination, and individual rights, or democracy. 4. A just peace requires that the refugee issue be addressed directly. 5. A just peace must be economically viable. 6. A just peace must address the security concerns of all in the region. 7. A just peace must be regional in scope. The next section that I will be reading from next Monday when I cover this paper in its entirety. 3 stages towards a just and comprehensive Middle East peace. Stage 1, a binational state in Palestine, Israel. Stage 2, a Middle Eastern Economic Confederation. Stage 3, a Middle East Confederation of Cultures and Peoples. Professor Halper is, as is inferred by the title of this paper here, really imagining the future. Establishing an endgame in Palestine and Israel while imagining the future. Very wholly inclusive subjects of substance to this whole issue he gets into. And that's pretty much it for this piece. He also gives many resources on ethnopolitics and the one-state solution. Declarations and conferences, articles and books. Selected websites. Another one for my as-yet-to-be-created classics folder. For the most important pieces that come to you by way of this Mideast Madness radio program. Folks, I tire from the exercise of and the very sound of my own voice. I think I'm going to throw it in terms of simply talking at you. I do want to remind everyone that this is an underground, affectionately referred to as pirate, free radio service. We are Free Radio Santa Cruz. Which can be investigated at freakradio.org. That's freak as in F-R-E-A-K, like freaky, freakradio.org. Of course, when you go to the main page and scroll down and see the various options, like listen and archives and donate and stuff like that, if you simply want to hear what is on our internet radio service, do not click the word listen. It no longer works. It has been sabotaged by the feds, or probably more accurately by the capitalists who want their cut of royalties from the music that you hear play on this service. Do not click on the word listen. Instead, you click on the bright red oval, which is at the top of the cartoon picture of the radio tower. Click on that. Feed it through your Real Player or Windows Explorer reception program if you need to do that. Make sure your speakers are on and you'll get Free Radio Santa Cruz. Again, that's click on the red or bright, bright pink oval. Orange, perhaps. Orange oval. Depending on how your computer screen is configured for tone of color, etc. Click on that, feed it through Real Player, iTunes, what have you, and you'll hear some radio stuff coming at you. true community radio. We require and most sincerely beg of you your economic support. We need donations. We are forbidden by our own bylaws, incidentally, from support through corporations, foundations, or local entrepreneurs who have an agreement set up with us, like other commercial radio stations do, as in, you advertise for us and we'll support you monetarily. Our bylaws forbid that. So, individual programmers, everyone who does a program on free radio, including this guy here, Ren to Wheel, pays on a monthly basis, if we do not occasionally get behind by some number of months. I'm up to date, by the way. We pay cash for the privilege of doing our shows and in large measure to support the service so we can stay on the air. The rest of it must come from you. Okay, so who do I send my donation to? Folks, please send your donations. Check your money order, most assuredly preferred, to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Just write on the envelope, FRSC, P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California. That's two words, Santa, as in the jolly fat red elf. Cruz, C-R-U-Z, Santa Cruz, in the feminine form, California, zip code 95061. Again, write to, send your donations to FRSC, Post Office Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Let's do some more Arabic music. I love you all, even the ones that I hate sometimes. And more from my favorite Middle Eastern music album, The Music of Arab Americans, a retrospective collection.
كان معي مال بحبح ظنت حالي رح اربح كان معي مال بحبح ظنت حالي رح اربح طلعت من اللعب مشرشح طلعت من اللعب مشرشح وما تغمض جفني بالليل ما تغمض جفني بالليل
لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهد الخيل 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 مرة بتربح شريالين ومرات بتخسر ألفين مرة بتربح شريالين ومرات بتخسر ألفين كل خسارة عالحالين كل خسارة عالحالين حالتنا صفت بالويل وحالتنا صفت بالويل